What a day in Duval. Welcome back to the Locked On Jaguars podcast. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Make sure to throw me a follow on Twitter for correct predictions slash takes slash whatever you want to call it, at Zach underscore Goodall, as well as my trusty co-host, Chris Thornton, who puts out articles at just the right time. It's been a good day for our brands here, and maybe a good day for the Jaguars, as this morning we got a news break that offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett had officially been relieved of his duties by head coach Doug Marrone in a move that Marrone felt was best for the team. After that, at his press conference at 2:45, Marrone confirmed Scott Milanovic, the quarterback coach, will be taking over play calling duties. A first time for him in the NFL doing that at the age of 45. We'll talk a lot more about that transition and what Milanovic has in his history, as well as another major bit of news. The Blake Bortles experiment appears to be done. Just, 9 months now removed from his 3-year contract extension, he has been benched in favor of Cody Kessler. I wrote about a theory this morning about exactly how that would happen, what Marrone was trying to do with all of these moves, and they look pretty solid right now, so we're going to get into it. But before we do anything, we want to be sure to let you know you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Megaphone.fm, where the free listening's at. Just look up Locked On Jaguars and you can hear us there. Keep leaving those ratings and reviews. Bookmark the site, as Chris just put out his quarterback evaluation on Will Grier. We got some more coming your way. Dwayne Haskins is up next for me, the quarterback for Ohio State. A lot of great content coming out. We are amped up. If you can't tell, I've had a lot of coffee today, and that's not what's exciting me, because the Jaguars did some good stuff today. Hackett gets fired. Milanovic gets hired, in a way. He gets the interim offensive coordinator position slapped on his resume. This is a big move that kind of makes sense in a way, but it's not as if Nate was the only problem with the offense, and they clearly addressed the other problem, which we're going to break down in our second segment. But Chris, what was your reaction initially when Hackett was fired, and how you felt about it before the Bortles news and up to now? Like, how are you feeling on that move as a whole?
I can give it to you in an audio form.
Woohoo!
I had a song that instead of celebration said Nathaniel Hackett is gone. Woohoo! That was the first thing that I played. But I am ecstatic, because I tell you what, the last few weeks have been absolutely dreadful as a Jaguars fan. And honestly, the last 3 or so home games, I have had zero desire to go. And now I have a renewed energy and a renewed, well, I won't say confidence, but a renewed desire to sit and bake in TIAA Bank Field. So I think that's something that a lot of people might say. I think a lot of people probably were dreading this game against the Andrew Luck-led Colts this Sunday coming up, but I think a lot of people might be a little bit more excited to go to the Jags game this week, seeing that Cody's starting. And although they were dealt a blow with Andrew Norwell being placed on IR, that O-line's getting worse and worse by the week. It'll be nice to just see maybe some competent quarterback play. Obviously, we'll see how it does, because it's backups on backups at a lot of positions. But nonetheless, a renewed enthusiasm for this fan base is what I'll like to say for this move.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think Milanovic is definitely an interesting guy who can come in and try and replace Hackett for the final 5 games of the year. We'll talk a bit more about Milanovic, but I viewed that move as an alpha move by Marrone. And I think there's a lot more to it than just saying, yeah, the offense sucked, so we're getting rid of Hackett. Marrone and Hackett have been very tight for a very long while. They've been with each other for going on a decade, continuously working with each other, going back to Syracuse and then to Buffalo Bills, to now here in Jacksonville. They've all been partners the entire time. And you could tell Marrone seemed really pissed having to announce his firing during his press conference today. Obviously, you weren't going to expect him to be happy about any of this type of stuff, but he seemed a lot more down than he normally is, because they're good friends. That's very well known that they're good friends, and it's hard to have to fire your good friend just coming from a people standpoint, which makes me think that there was a lot more to this. there's the widely believed conspiracy that Dave Caldwell has a mandate that Bortles is the starting quarterback, and that Caldwell has this power to say that he wanted to hire someone that would keep Bortles as the starter. He promotes from within. That's what he did when they brought in Marone and kept Hackett as the offensive mind. The report that they he convinced, as well as the help of Doug Marone, is what they say. But I believe this is a Caldwell move, aligning himself with the GM, that Bortles could potentially be the guy if he sticks around and they buy into him. And I think Hackett aligned himself with that thinking, because at the end of the day, he's just the offensive coordinator and is working with what's being given to him to maybe try and save himself and keep him around. And we've not seen any doubt from Hackett about Bortles in the past. He's always been very complimentary. Just last week gave his confidence in him. And we have seen it from Marone. Bortles has been benched not once, not twice, but now three times in his 1.5 years as the Jaguars head coach. Bortles was benched last preseason in favor of Chad Henne opening up the competition. He was benched midway through the Texans game a couple weeks ago, said that there would be a competition pretty much for the quarterback position that week. They'd be trying to figure it out. And then Monday, Bortles gets named the starter again. They don't even take a snap in practice and Bortles is named the starter. So that automatically makes you think there's someone speaking up and saying that no, Bortles is going to be the guy. In which case, what can Marone do when he's got his back against the wall doing something that he doesn't want to do, but he doesn't have the power to do it? What he does have the power to do is make staffing changes to send a message. So he just so happens to go ahead and fire someone who's been one of the staunchest public Blake supporters. Obviously, Caldwell doesn't do interviews throughout the season, so he can't come out and say, oh yeah, I love Blake. Like, he does that in the offseason when he gives him the extension. But Hackett, like I said last week, he was giving his confidence. So Marone does what's got to be incredibly hard to do in firing one of his better friends and probably closest friend really on the coaching staff. But in return, he's sending that message to, hey, like, I'm done with this experiment about Bortles. I wanted to play Kessler. I want to save the season. And I know that the quarterback position is not cutting it right now. So this is what I'm going to do. And that's a ballsy move by Marone, because at the end, there are guys above him and they could very well say, okay, well, you went against what we wanted to do, so bye-bye after the end of the season. But at the same time, like, as of now, if they start winning, Marone's going to look like a genius.
He's going to look like a genius, but also the fan base will probably be gay. I wouldn't surprise me if the fan base got more angry if Cody Kessler finds success, because at this point, they'd be like, why didn't you do this sooner? And at this point, yes, that might be hindsight for a lot of people, but I think that's one thing that you do have to fear, because somebody said today, they said Cody Kessler is going to run the show, get a few W's, mess up draft position, and then convince the coaching staff he's the guy beyond the future. So that's definitely something that it's in the realm of possibility, really. But needless to say, Marone probably will look like a genius. I mean, you would look like a genius making this decision by any means, because obviously Blake wasn't it. But, I mean, like I said, it's just renewed confidence, I think, in a lot of people and a lot of people in the team. I'm sure the defense, I think the defense is probably going to honestly play better, because we saw when Cody came in his half start a few weeks ago that the defense, after looking sluggish the last 2 or 3 weeks after they're getting blown out by Kansas City and Dallas, came back and looked good. They looked like their old defense or their old selves. So I think a change at quarterback is really going to do wonders for not only on the field but off the field, and it's probably especially in the locker room.
Now, Milanovic, like I said, he was a CFL hot commodity, and he's got playing history at the quarterback position. He played, I think, for 8 years, a little bit in the NFL, a little bit in the NFL Europe, a little bit in the XFL, the AFL. And I believe his final resting spot as a quarterback was the CFL before taking a job with four different teams in the CFL as an offensive mind, starting as a QB coach, making his way to offensive coordinator. When he finally got the head coaching position for the Toronto Argonauts, he won a Grey Cup, and that is the equivalent of the Super Bowl in Canadian terms. Chris, you should know all about this.
The Grey Cup.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the Grey Cup.
Yeah, so he's obviously, you know, he's an offensive mind that's made a name for himself in Canada, and he was named the Jaguars quarterbacks coach last year. They were able to get something out of Bortles, which I guess you give credit to him and Hackett for that 1 year of decent at best football play out of a quarterback who's one of the worst in the league. Hackett being gone now, Milanovic steps up. I don't know exactly how much of the game plan will change, because like I said, I think that there's a lot more to the Hackett firing than just, you know, Hackett being fired. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a good chance for him, especially if Marone does end up staying. The Jaguars could be impressed with what Milanovic brings and decide to hire him. He's going to be one of the bigger names come January if he does at least decently well for the rest of the year with Cody Kessler, considering what they were able to kind of get out of Bortles last year. And he was already a decently hot name coming up the ranks from the CFL. So I guess he's probably their best option too right now, right?
Yeah. I mean, at this point in the season, any move that you would have, I'm trying to think of the words here, any move that you might have not thought of at the beginning of the season is probably the correct move now at any position. And if we're going to starting people that shouldn't be starting, maybe Ronnie Harrison sees the field a little more. So on a complete opposite spectrum of things like that, maybe we're going to see a bunch of sweeping changes. Maybe at this point the coaching staff and whatnot are basically just kind of going to blow it up and see what happens.
Yeah, we'll definitely see. And another thing they blew up was the quarterback position. The Blake Bortles experiment is over. We'll talk about that when we come back from this quick break.
Winter is coming and nobody has you prepared like Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures up to 135 degrees and are powered by rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion batteries that last up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone and any other gadget while you're wearing them. Perfect for any friend or family on that holiday gift list that might be getting cold a little bit too easily. But they're also great for anyone who works outdoors, skiers and snowboarders, or anybody that just loves the outdoors or hates being cold. Action Heat provides toasty warmth and comfort for your entire body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts and long johns. Action Heat is available in men's and women's and have great new styles and models just released for this winter season. Make winter activities more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you toasty and warm, even in the most frigid winter weather. We've got a special deal for our listeners to save 20% off your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon. Or use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Stay toasty warm while enjoying all your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. And we thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
So the second biggest piece of news that comes from today is it's Cody Kessler time. Something that we've been calling for a while, something that I believe is the best move for this team, and I believe is what Marone has wanted to do for a very long while at this point. Kessler did a decent job in the Texans game, given how far... you know, back the Jaguars were at that point. I think he went 21 of 30, pretty accurate. He's not going to wow anyone, but if they keep to the West Coast philosophy, I think he's a great fit for what this offense wants to do. And if they decide to go quarterback early and want to, you know, let the quarterback kind of sit and develop, maybe Kessler can find himself into being the bridge quarterback here.
Yeah. I mean, having a bridge quarterback in-house would be nice because that kind of saves you some cap on the open market next year, because the Jags at this moment are, I believe, $9 million over the cap, so they have to make some cuts anyway. But having a bridge quarterback who maybe knows the system, depending on who stays in house, what play calling and stuff they obviously keep, that could change. But they traded for Cody this past offseason, so they obviously liked him a decent enough to at least maybe have him as a bridge quarterback. Maybe this was their plan all along. But having a guy possibly as the bridge like Cody, you probably should still go out and sign a vet maybe not like a Tyrod or I'm trying to think of other people hitting the market, but maybe not a Teddy Bridgewater, maybe not somebody of that stature, but maybe Josh McCown or somebody like that, a really seasoned vet, and then you draft a guy early. I think that's the plan at this point. Like you said, Cody could be a bridge quarterback, and then you draft a guy early. You have the seasoned vet to help your rookie, and then you have Cody and the vet maybe as a quarterback battle, ultimately just giving it to Cody because he's probably the younger option, and see what kind of worth you can get out of him. Who knows, maybe if Cody balls out, you have a competent starter while the rookie can actually sit and watch for a year, or if something happens and your rookie comes in, you can maybe trade Kessler, I don't know. But I kind of like the idea of Cody as a bridge quarterback at this point. He hasn't really shown anything that he couldn't be that guy, but he's about to get really his first start with the Jags this week, so that would definitely be interesting to see how that goes.
Now, what do you think he can do for the rest of the year? Assuming they keep the game plan that they've done, what do you think that he and Milanovic can improve on, like, not just like what they should do, but what you believe they are capable of doing at this point? Or is the offense just so totally out of sync that there really is no way to save this ship?
I don't think that's really the case. I think the offense was suffering from a Blake Bortles. Because all throughout the year, people were making that narrative that wide receivers weren't getting open and stuff. And as you pointed out, they were getting open. Now you have a quarterback who doesn't necessarily have the biggest arm, but he's at least decently accurate and has not a five-second windup to get a pass. So I still think we're going to see a lot of crossers, but this time you're going to have a quarterback who's very accurate within 10 yards and can hit those crossers. D.D. Westbrook, it's probably going to explode again. But you can open it up a little bit. Your run game is probably going to benefit from it. The only downside right now that I can think of is really just the O-line being in tatters. How much is Cody going to be able to actually do behind that basically a third string offensive line if you're adding up the average across the entire line? But I think the offense is going to do a little better. It makes sense that they had Scott be put up as OC because Scott, being the quarterback's coach, knows what Cody can and can't do, and really any good offensive coordinator should be able to do that, but I guess that's why Hackett got canned. He knows what Cody can and can't do and what he excels at and what he faults at. So I think he's really going to be able to create a game plan for what Cody can do and what really can help this offense moving forward.
And I think you make a great point with that because Mike Kay pointed this out to me in interviews from the offseason back in May and back in August when things were in full swing in training camp, that when Kessler came in, he wasn't just – I mean, obviously he's going to compliment the guys around him if he feels like he's in a good situation. And he said that, you know, he thought Nate Hackett was doing a good job, but he also was sure to go out of his way each time that he was asked about how he was being brought along to compliment Milanovic, saying that not only was Hackett, but so was Milanovic helping him learn how to – you know, go through his progressions in this offense and the West Coast style he really felt like he was meshing with. Every time that he mentioned Hackett's name, he was mentioning Milanovic. So there's clearly some form of chemistry there that's been building. Hopefully it can be a lot better than the Hackett Bortles chemistry that we've seen. But I also just think Kessler's a better quarterback than Bortles. So we'll just have to see from there. But obviously that covers the two big pieces of news for today. When we come back for our third segment, we're going to talk a little bit about potential options for this team at offensive coordinator and quarterback from an offseason standpoint, as well as taking a couple of rants / questions from Twitter. Chris, you can name one guy you want to be the team's offensive coordinator, not obviously for the rest of this season, but starting next season. Who is it?
That's a tough one because there's a lot of names that are being thrown around. Kingsbury is obviously a very popular name as of late. A guy that I was kind of looking into was maybe a guy like, I doubt he would take this because he has a pretty sweet gig at Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley. That's a name that, or a guy that I would obviously look into. He's young, has had great success at Oklahoma, coached up Baker Mayfield, who was eventually a first overall pick, to the Cleveland Browns. So I think probably down to Kingsbury or Lincoln Riley at the, as more of my Hail Mary, but those two guys are names that if they hired them, I'd be ecstatic because you need a new, I said in our Locked On Jaguars group chat, I was like, the Jags need to hire a young, new generation offensive coordinator. None no more of this bland 1970s offense. You can use the pieces that you have. You have Leonard Fournette. Utilize him because it's always good to have a running back, a good running back. But you got to catch up to the rest of the NFL, because when you look at these teams like the Chiefs and the Rams and the Saints and all these high-flying offenses, you're decades behind where the NFL is going. So you need an offensive coordinator that's willing to step outside the box. You need kind of like a Shanahan type guy, or Steve Sarkisian, how he's kind of picked it up in Atlanta. You need somebody that can kind of revolutionize your offense, because right now you're decades behind the rest of the NFL, and you're not going to win if you can't catch up.
Now, you mentioned Kingsbury. You did a scouting report on Will Greer last night. I think that could be a legitimate match, those two being put together from the philosophies that they've run at their respective schools. Greer is obviously the somewhat local hero because he spent a year playing really well with the Florida Gators. Obviously, that didn't end too well, but people still have fond memories of him being the last decent quarterback that Florida's had really in the past however many years since Tebow left. So what do you think of that combination? And obviously you've done a lot of work on Greer yourself, so you can kind of plug some of the work you did. And obviously, of course, if you haven't checked out that article that Chris did on Greer, be sure to check that out on Locked On Jaguars right now. It's his most recent scouting report, our second QB scouting report of the year, with more to come.
Yeah, so on the Will Greer report, I watched about four full games of Will Greer. I watched, obviously, his game against Texas. That was one that I made an emphasis to watch. I watched the Kansas game. I watched live last week the Oklahoma-West Virginia game. And then I forget what the last game was. It was some D2 school. But the biggest thing that I can say for Will Greer is his number one attribute is his ball placement skills. He is phenomenal at able to put a ball into a contested window and get it to where only the receiver can get it. Now, on the flip side, he also has some really bad mental lapses where he will put the ball only where the DB can get it and throw a back-breaking pick. We've seen that before. But I would like to point out that the great window on spot throws happened much more than the interceptions. This year, I think he has like 37 touchdowns to 8 interceptions. Now, looking at stats at a Big 12 quarterback is a little misleading, because in the Big 12, there's basically no defense. So your stats are going to be run up. But like I said, watching the Texas and Oklahoma game, Texas in particular, Greer made some big boy throws, especially his game winner. Rolling out to his right, 20 seconds left on the clock in the fourth quarter, down 6. Greer is scrambling, and without his feet even being set, corks the ball because he sees David Sills running in the back of the end zone. Not even the back, he's heading towards the end zone, and the two DBs are maybe a foot behind him. And he corks it midair and drops an absolute dime to Sills in the back of the end zone, where only he can get it to score the game-winning touchdown. I posted the GIF specifically on my timeline, but it's also in that Greer report on LockedOnJaguars.com. That might be one of the most beautiful throws that I've seen from a college quarterback in a long, long time. So obviously that's one of the biggest things you can get. He's not very mobile. I believe he has like negative 97 rushing yards on his career. He can scramble if he needs to, but at West Virginia, he's not really asked a whole lot. But I'd really say that his highs are really high with some of his throws, but his lows can be really low, especially when watching the Kansas game. He threw 3 red zone interceptions, almost all of them in the end zone or on the goal line. So that's something that he's definitely going to have to adjust and get better at, is not throwing those interceptions. But for the most part, I was really pleased with watching Will Greer.
Yeah, and I think that could end up being a fit if they want to go innovative. And like I mentioned with Kingsbury, because he was the air raid type of dude. I mean, you guys watched Pat Mahomes come along so well. That dude wasn't supposed to get drafted going in like a year and a half before he got drafted. Then suddenly he worked his way from, you know, this dude's really unorthodox and we don't know if he'd be able to work at the NFL level. He's an air raid QB to, he's probably a mid-round pick, something like that, with a really strong arm, to holy shit, this dude's going top 10. right? Kingsbury is a really innovative offensive mind. Will Greer runs a spread air raid type of mix going against the Big 12. You know, that might be a perfect combo, but you have to get the Jaguars on board with going into an innovative style of offense and not the pounding ground type of offense that they've been running. Now, I think we can move on to some of the reactions that we've gotten on Twitter. I will start with a take from Boog, who has been a friend of the podcast for a while. He pretty much came out and said he's been thinking for a while that Hackett needs to go. So does Wash, and that the OC hire needs to be transcending. This will be the most important hire that we'd make. And I'd say even more than the GM, because anyone is more competent than Dave Caldwell. But so that the new offense needs to find a way to utilize the run game and make the pass game important again. And that there can be balance when you've got two power running backs there and yet still try and find a way to be innovative in the passing game, because Hyde is able to work out of the gun a little bit more than Leonard is. You've got some versatility despite them running a lot of the same stuff. So it's going to take a lot, because there is so much investment into this run game right now. They can't just completely ditch it, but they're going to need that type of innovation.
Yeah, I mean, innovation is key in today's NFL. So we saw what the Rams did with Sean McVay. Sean McVay was Kirk Cousins. I believe he was the offensive coordinator in Washington. Kirk Cousins obviously getting paid after that, but was running a really strong offense in Washington. And then the Rams decide to make the bold move in signing Sean McVay as the youngest head coach in NFL history. And we can obviously see how that's helping them right now. McVay is young, innovated. He gets the NFL and where it's going. And I think that's really where you have to go with these hires. You can't kind of backtrack anymore with some of these hires. Sometimes lack of experience might be better for you. You want to have somebody who has play calling experience, but maybe go for the young gun hire, because honestly, your window is closing fast to the Super Bowl. And especially if you're drafting a guy, let this new OC pick who he wants to run and build an offense around, and then just run with it. I'm sure, because at this point, Jags fans don't really have a lot to lose. Last year, this conversation is completely different, but this year, your team is slowly breaking apart little by little, and innovation might be the thing that saves it.
Now, we have our second reaction from Kevin Brown, and he has some different thoughts on it. He doesn't think that these are silver bullet moves, but they're good moves at the same time. He views this as an opportunity to start evaluating the current talent, and that this is essentially the start of the offseason. That very well might be true. They might think that Kessler can win them games, but at the end of the day, I mean, we said it earlier, this is the best look at what if Milanovic can win himself a permanent job and if Kessler can win himself a bridge job for a quarterback. So they might as well do the same thing across the roster.
Yeah, I mean, it's not asinine to say that the offseason's basically started, because at this point, I don't think you're mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, but your chances are very slim at this point. And honestly, who wants to make the playoffs with this roster? You're not getting far. You're not competing with the Saints or the Rams or the Chiefs or anybody like that in the playoffs. So you're at this point, it's just, yeah, it's audition time. It's audition season. People are auditioning for jobs. People are trying to keep their jobs. You might win some games. That's just going to happen. And I'm completely for the Jags winning the rest of their home games. I believe that's only like two left. You have the Colts and the Redskins, but honestly, if they win those two games and lose the rest, I'd be content, because at least I'd see, four wins at home this year again, which would at least somewhat justify my season tickets for the year. I think that's not too crazy to say that the offseason's basically started. A lot of people are auditioning for next year, and you just got to roll with it and see what you can get out of it. And maybe guys like Barry Church might not be the pencil and starter anymore. Maybe guys like Ronnie Harrison will have a shot. We'll see that maybe across the board. I'd like to see that at least. So not crazy by any means to say that the offseason has started, because honestly, it probably started 3 weeks ago.
It feels like it has been here forever. Last question coming from Jason O. What's the chance Blake Bortles is on the opening day roster in 2019?
That's a really tough one, because I would, with the current regime, like 80%. If they get a new regime, like 20%. So,
define new regime, like completely clear the house or just get rid of certain people.
New GM.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I think
literally, if you only change that, Bortles isn't on the roster next year.
If Caldwell is gone, Blake is gone. Yeah. I agree with you completely, because while they do take on some dead cap at the end of the day, they do have a small window of savings that
just post
exactly what the logistics are. I know you have it down.
Post June 1st cut designation, you save $9.5 million next year when cutting Blake.
And obviously, like, Caldwell very much has a say in what's going on with Blake. Otherwise, this wouldn't be so dramatic as it is at this point. He wouldn't have started past the Houston game, most likely. Kessler probably would have taken over, but you know that there's something going on here. If Caldwell's on the roster, in the front office, I should say, Blake Bortles, I literally view it as 0 or 100. If Caldwell's here, Blake's here. If Caldwell isn't here, Blake is not here. I just think that's how it's going to work at this point, because no one's coming here with the idea of Blake Bortles even being a thought. And I'm talking a quarterback signing. I'm talking about an offensive coordinator, a new GM, anything like that. Like, it's these two guys are literally like linked together forever at this point.
Yeah. I mean, you've been on that train for a while that the only reason Blake Bortles is on this roster is because Dave Caldwell is doing anything he can to save his job or prove that it wasn't a bad draft pick, which it's been really obvious that it was the correlation between the two. So, yeah, I'll go with you on the 0 or 100. If Caldwell is still in power, then it's a 100% chance. If he's not in power, then it's a 0% chance. I'll roll with that. That's a pretty thing to and also, I mean, if Blake Bortles gets cut, he's retiring. Not a lot of people like to say that, but, you know.
Honestly, like, I wouldn't be overly shocked. That's something we could talk about another day, though. I know people don't like that take, but I think he's happy with his life outside of football. I think that should just about do it, then, in a real, real big news day here. Make sure to subscribe, Locked On Jaguars. You can find us anywhere you can listen to podcasts. Keep leaving those ratings and reviews. We got a lot of work coming over to the site. Make sure to bookmark it, lockedonjaguars.com. We'll catch up with you guys later.